For the latest news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring the Boston Bastion Brigade, visit our website at www.b3crew.com.
Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/BostonBastionBrigade. Follow us on Twitter under our respective pen names.
And don't forget to check out the rest of the Land of Esh programming, including the Electric Sisterhood, Geek Aggro, and the Issues program.
When the sisters are away, the bastards will play. It's time for the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Episode 150, The Real B-Word.
Bastards and wenches, please rise for the Boston National Anthem.
For Boston, for Boston, we sing our hundred men. For Boston, take my scars and my fame. And ever with a right shot as they bound to touch me no more in the market shop. For Boston, for Boston, our glory is over.
Bastards and wenches, may be seated, and welcome to another episode of the Boston Bass Brigade. I'm King Baby Duck.
I'm Blue Onyx.
Tag.
And this is our 150th episode.
I can't believe we made it this far.
Me neither.
How have we not killed each other?
I know. So we got Tag here, and I was thinking to myself, it's our 150th show. What's something special we can do for it?
Oh, God.
And then I thought to myself, why don't we invite one of our favorite bands that we've interviewed in the past to come on the show? So, joining us via satellite, because saying that she's coming from Skype isn't as cool.
No, it's not.
Is the drummer for one of my favorite rock bands out there. Not only do they have a new album called Collide and Conquer due in September, but you can see them every Thursday night on the Showtime reality series, The Real World. The real L word.
Oh, God, not the real word.
No, not yet.
Take a breath.
The very talented drummer from the group Hunter Valentine, Miss Laura Petreca.
Hello.
Hi. So, how are things going with the band?
Oh, the band's doing really well. We've been really busy. We're getting ready to, as you just said, we're releasing our new album, Collide and Conquer, in September. So, we literally 24 hours ago, just signed off on everything. So the album's complete, the artwork's complete, and it's being sent to the printer. So it's in process of being 100% completed. And also just getting together our tours. We have a tour in Canada, a tour in the U.S., and we're sort of just putting those together. So we're really busy.
Excellent. Now, can you give us a little bit of hint on what the album artwork is going to be like?
We actually have, it's one of Vero's longtime friends, her name's Leslie and Stelton, and she did all the photography and illustration, and it's sort of her take on it, and it's sort of a combination of sexy, gritty, dirty, I mean, kind of like what we are, so it really portrays that in the artwork. I'm really excited for everybody to see it.
So it's kind of grindhousey.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally like motor oil is smeared all over us. You know what I mean? Like, it's literally
I like that already. That is awesome.
Literally. yeah, it's I love it. It's sort of really, I like that. I like it because it's sexy, and I feel like we haven't really taken that route before. And, you know, not that we aren't sexy, it's just that
I was about to say, what are you talking about?
I mean, we definitely are. It's just that we're you know, we decided, let's just, like, I mean, we got Vero in the band now. You know what I mean? She's a hot, sexy girl. And I just think that, like, we needed to really just sort of, you know, bring it out this time.
Right. And as you mentioned, you've got Vero, the newest bassist, and you also have the new guitarist and keyboardist, Summer.
Summer, yeah.
Yeah. So with those two new additions to the group, was there a different vibe in the studio when you were recording?
The studio was really different because as you also mentioned, we've been on the real L word. So we had to sort of, most of the pre-production happened in Canada, and that was before filming. And then as we started recording, we only got all the bed tracks done, which is just, you know, guitar, bass, and drums. and hadn't done anything else and had to go on tour, and filming started. And as that started, because we're based in New York, of course we had to finish the recording in New York. And so this was a new experience for me because we sort of split recording into, you know, two different cities, two different studios, you know, different engineers. So it was a completely different experience. And then also once in a while, which never actually so far hasn't made editing, but, you know, having a camera crew in there, and that's a bit different. You know, I had sort of said, if, you know, not that I want to be, you know, I'm not the dictator, so to say, because obviously that role's been taken on the show. But you know, my one thing was, you know, if you're going to be in this studio, you cannot talk. And you cannot tell us what to do. You can, you know, because like a lot of reality is, it is, you know, them just filming you. But a lot of it also is like, oh, sorry, can you say that again? I didn't really catch it properly. Or, you know, so that's reality, really, you know. Or can you walk through that door 5 times? I need to get every angle. You know, it's like, okay. So.
Wow. Smoke and mirrors, ladies and gentlemen. Smoke and mirrors. So,
I mean, you know, well, obviously, I mean, you see somebody like Whitney walk into the front door of her house, and all of a sudden, you see the backside of her. She didn't, you know, they don't have like 5 cameramen. You know, like it's like they do make you do it twice.
So, wow. Yeah. Oh my god.
It's fun though. It, you know, at one point, you sort of feel like you're on like a set for a movie all the time. You know.
It's like either Truman Show or EdTV of sorts.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. So with this camera crew in there and having to go back and forth between Toronto and New York to record and mix it, I take it there'd be a lot of challenges that have been thrown on the new album.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had, and the other good thing about this album also is that we decided that we wanted to have a lot of different writers. Like, you know, the first album was a lot of just Kiyomi, Adrian, and I, and same with the second album. We had, you know, it was basically us. Plus, obviously, the producers always helped sort of shape the sound a little bit, but this was the first time where we really allowed, like, we had a new writer, Vero, you know, Summer co-wrote on a couple tracks, and then we had the producer who really tried to remold. He had said, like, I want to try to remold some of these songs, and we said, okay, deconstruct them. So just, you know, really stepping outside of our element was what was really new for us, I guess, you know? So these songs are different, let's just say that. And I like them a lot, personally.
And you've been releasing a new track each week up to its release. You've released This Bull Rides Tonight, Liar Liar, Little Curse, Crying. So far, a lot of people have been really liking them, especially us here. We've been loving them.
Absolutely awesome. Now, are they going to be introducing a lot of these tracks into like the L Word and whatnot? Are they like are they helping you on that end of the spectrum as well?
Well, they've played This Bull Rides, obviously, because it was on the first episode, and they really really showed that tune off. Crying has been on the show, but it's sort of backing tracks. Same with Liar Liar, and that's sort of it as of right now. They are using some of the songs, but you know, basically for us, we figured it's sort of like a teaser because we put one up, we take it down. You know, I know everyone kind of wants to hear it, and it's not in any specific order of the album. It's just kind of like, you know, whatever we feel like putting up, and those 4 songs are kind of on the show, but
I don't know. You did a little bit of Little Curse on episode 3, if I recall. I think that was Little Curse.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think you're right. It's,
awesome.
So
how do you feel the fans are liking the new tracks? What sort of feedback have you been hearing from them?
We've got a lot of great feedback in general. You know, the tracks people love, like they're loving them. They love, so far it sounds like the biggest, favorite is probably either This Bull Rides and Little Curse has had a really big sort of overwhelming feedback. I think a lot of people like the harder stuff, you know?
Yeah, because that's what really got me into your group in the first place, was just that whole hard rock sort of vibe that I really don't see in a lot of all-female rock bands.
It's true. I mean, when you get an all-female rock band, a lot of the times you get either punk or you get sort of more, I mean, I can't really generalize it because there are a lot of different bands, but yeah, I find that a lot of the girls don't, you know, girl bands don't really, really rock it out, you know? And that was sort of like our thing from the start. And when we did first start the band, I mean, we were all very different, you know, musicians, but as we've grown together and now as we've evolved into a different band, Kiyomi and I have definitely maintained sort of that hardy, you know, edge rock roughness, which is definitely inside of us. You know what I mean? We're tough girls, and we want to sort of portray that as musicians in our music.
And you've been doing a phenomenal job. If you remember, we gave Lessons from the Late Night the number 5 spot on top albums of 2010, and we were just blown out of water.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I remember, I don't know if you remember, but I made the point, was like, this was like one of the first all-girl bands outside of Japan with this sort of sound that I've ever heard. Because I'm a big follower of the Japanese music scene, and over there they got so many all-girl rock bands, some poppy, some with a really hard rock sound, some more punky, but you're one of the first artists, one of the first bands that, for one thing, speaks English and does the whole hard rock balls to the wall type of sound that not since Joan Jett and Cherry Curley started up the Runaways back in the 1970s.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, we're hoping to take it all the way, you know, like we're ready to just, I feel like, you know, this L Word thing has been really positive for us because, you know, there's a lot of people that have never heard of us before and now they get to, and we're reading, you know, we're reaching out to it's not a new demographic, but there are a lot of different people that watch that show. You know, it's not just lesbians. It's not just, you know, women. I mean, there's a lot of different people that watch it. And so we're definitely reaching out and hopefully, you know, people will, you know, watch the show for what it is, but really take the music and, you know, not really pay too much attention of what a reality television show does, you know? Like, there's a lot of people out there that think Kiyomi's really the way that she's being shown. And it's like, you know, like, she's not really like this, but, you know, they cut together, you know, they were with us for 3 months, you know? They filmed us 24/7 for 3 months. Of course, they're, you know, Kiyomi's going to have bad moments, and they got those.
And they're only
showing those moments.
They're not going to miss one.
They're going to be like, ratings, 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 ratings.
This is what she feels about this right now.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, it's funny that it's funny because, you know, now I don't really go out that much. I don't want to, like, you know, burst any bubbles. But I don't really, you know, I'm kind of like, I'm really busy and I don't, you know, I don't party as much as I used to, but I have been going out a couple times. And when I go out, you know, people come up to me and they're fun because I love talking to people, but they're funny because they're like, oh, I would want to be your friend. I wouldn't want to be Kiyomi's. And I'm like, well, you know, she's my best friend. Yeah. She's my best friend. So you're probably telling the wrong person. But right.
Because it's not like, well, you could just say, you know, that's just the way the show is edited. She's not like that all the time.
I know. And it's hard because, you know, on the social sites that, you know, I work, what, you know, we split the jobs of the social sites and stuff. But out of the ones that I do and I'm, you know, reading all these comments, and a lot of them, like I said, 90 to 95% are positive, and that's great. And for the 5% that want to tell us how they really feel, I also respect that because, you know, it's like, you know, they just want to tell us how much they think, you know, whatever they think. And and sometimes it's not, you know, it's not nice, but it's okay, you know. And what can I say? It's like, you know, people are entitled to their opinions and, you know, they cannot like us because we're on a reality television show and that's fine. And I'm fine with that. Like, you know, I don't watch every reality television show out there, but, you know, when the, you know, the, what was it, the Barkers? You know that? Remember that reality television show?
I think so.
The Barkers.
Barkers.
It was Meet the Barkers. Meet the Barkers.
Was it
Travis Barker?
I thought it was the Parkers.
It was like Travis Barker, the drummer.
Oh,
the drummer
yes.
From
Blink
182.
Oh, that's
and
right.
Like, you know, you watch that show and that was just about this guy who's a drummer in a band and extremely busy and owns like a, you know, clothing company. And, you know, you watch him like rehearse in his studio and you see his wife sleeping all day. And it's just like, I'm sure she didn't sleep all day, but like they make it seem like she only sleeps and does nothing.
Yeah.
And he's like busy from 7 a.m. till, you know, 5 a.m. And it's like, I'm sure he's also not that busy, but you know, it's like, it's just reality television. It's funny.
Well, that's why, that's the weird thing about reality TV is like, they're trying to show you everything all at once within a half hour to an hour, like, segment, and it's like, you're gonna splice the living hell out of it and make it seem like the time clock went by, like, faster than it really did, or situations
if you watch closely... Sorry, if you watch closely an episode, I think when we're on tour, so it's like episode 3. If you watch very closely, Kiyomi is in 2 different outfits in the exact same scene, as well as I am. So you can tell that, like, I was like, wait a minute, I'm wearing white in that, like, I'm wearing the same jacket, but I'm like, hey, I'm wearing a white t-shirt in this scene. And then it chops to the next scene. I'm like, oh, now I'm wearing a red one.
it's like Kung Pao. Enter the fist. He's like, I am a great magician. You are now wearing red. He's like, that is amazing. And he's like, now you're wearing black. And he comes back and he's doing like, he's talking the scene. Oh, man.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So I know, Blanc, you have a question about how they got on.
Well, yeah, one of the things is like, how did you get selected? But like, what were they like, hey, sign up for this or something like that to come on the L Word? Or what, you know, did you approach them and say, hey, we want to be on the L Word? Because it's kind of hard to like, how does it all come together in one, you know, big show? Because that's what always gets me. It's like, I know that a lot of the other reality shows, like, they put in casting calls and all this other stuff,
right?
But this one seems like I would have a feeling that they probably approached you and said,
yeah,
because you're a band and because of that your group is of lesbians, would be great to be on the show for the L Word, you know. And we would want to see from your side of United States to the West Coast side. So it was kind of interesting to see that when I first saw the commercials for it.
Yeah, no, they basically and it happened really quickly. They basically approached us. Let's see here. It was in December of last year, and they said, you know, we were interested in sort of, you know, changing up the show. We want to sort of focus on the East Coast as well as the West Coast. And we want to show, you know, a different type of lesbian and different in sort of different, you know, fields, because they have a lot of I think Whitney and Romy are both makeup artists and, like, you know, just sort of, I don't know, I guess not anymore, but, you know, it's just sort of like they wanted to portray a different type of genre, let's say, of lesbian. And we had to jump through a lot of hoops. We had to, you know, we did a Skype interview. We did like an audition. We did. Hold on a second, actually. Just gonna close this door.
Traveling.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Let's pause for a second. No. Anyway, yeah. So we had to do different auditions. There is a crazy amount of paperwork that has to be done. You know, there's like, you have to basically tell your life story from when you're 12 into the present moment. So there's a lot, like, hours and hours of paperwork. They flew us to LA. We met all of the very important people that put the show together. And they ripped us apart for about 5 minutes. And then we got the call that we got picked. So that's kind of how it went.
That's pretty awesome.
It took a long time. It took a month to, or I guess it actually took, yeah, it took a whole entire month to go through everything between the paperwork, the going to LA, the audition. They even had, they sent, because we were in Toronto when we were starting to do all the pre-production, they even flew a psychiatrist out to examine us, because I don't know if you've heard, but there's, you know, in reality television, there's some horror stories of people that go crazy, or I think there was can't remember which bachelor it was, but I heard this is a story that a bachelor on that bachelorette or whatever it was, one of the people that won was actually a serial killer. I don't know if you've ever heard that one.
Yeah,
really?
I think I heard that one. And it's just, it's one of those things where it's like they just want to make sure you're not going to like take a shit on stage and start throwing it at everybody.
I think they want to make. I mean, it's really intense. I mean, these people literally, like, they send you an email and it says, tell me what you're doing for the next week. And so you, and it's got to be detailed. So it's like, you know, this is sort of my week. And then they send you back a schedule. It says, okay, this is when we're going to come and do things with you. And sometimes, you know, your schedule gets sort of moved around a little bit depending on trying to coordinate a few things at once. And so, you know, it's like your life, it's, I think a lot of it has to do with, can you handle it? Because, you know, it's invasive and I love it. I love that it's invasive because I'm absolutely, I mean, as you've seen, I've been naked on the street and I love it, but it's like, you know, it's just like, you have to, can you handle it? You know, I think that's what it comes down to.
Speaking of that episode, I liked how no one seemed to mind who were like just passing by. No one was like freaking out. They were like, oh, someone's naked. It's a Tuesday already. Yeah.
Fantastic.
That just made my night.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, it's funny because people that my friends that see have been watching the show and they see that scene, they, every single one of them goes, oh, yeah. That's Laura. Nobody that I know is shocked by that. Wow. You know, if they're like, because I do that and I've done that a lot. And something that I used to do a lot is, you know, forever. And I'm talking like at least 5 years, 6 years. I'll go out to bars and just for fun, if I think it needs it, I'll take my shirt off while I'm ordering a drink. And people sometimes don't realize it. They don't realize it. I don't say it right away, and I'm just kind of topless, completely, you know, boobs out, and trying to order a drink. And sometimes, you know, and I'll do this at any bar, straight bars, gay bars. I actually like doing it at straight bars better because most people don't know how to react. You know, they don't know what to do. And so for me, that's fun. And I don't do it when people say, take your shirt off. Like at shows, a lot of the times people say, take your shirt off, take your shirt off. And I'm like, nope, you want me to take my shirt off, so now I'm not going to. I like doing it when you don't want it. Like when you don't expect it, when it's not supposed to happen. That's when I take my shirt off. Like at 6 o'clock in the evening in Brooklyn on I'm serious. Maybe it was like a Tuesday. Maybe it was a Wednesday. I don't remember. It was seriously early. We went at like 3 p.m, the day after a tour, and drank. I don't even think I ate that day, and I had like 10 different drinks. So,
oh.
Yeah. And I mean, and I felt awkward. Like I remember feeling like, you know, that moment of like, well, there's this really pretty girl. I know that me and my best friend both find her attractive. This has never happened before in my life. Yeah. What can I do to either ruin my chances and just get it over with, you know? And so I kind of knew it wasn't going to really make it better. I knew that, I mean, unless Lauren really likes a crazy girl like me, but I kind of figured that the kind of person I am is not really somebody that maybe, you know, she would want. And so I knew if I pulled out the boobs, that was going to just top it all off.
It was either going to seal the deal or ruin it all, right?
Yeah, I know it didn't.
I mean, I think I remember watching The Bachelorette one time. I was flipping around and it was just, I was like, all right, I've got nothing else better to watch right now. Here we go. So there's like,
yeah,
they're doing the introduction of like the guys to meet, you know, the female to like, you know, get, you know, the whole setup. And one of the guys apparently, like how you said about the psychiatric evaluation, I think he got by somehow. And he goes and just strips down naked and jumps in the pool while screaming, I love you! And then jumps in the pool. So I'm like, holy shit, that guy's already out of there.
Yeah.
He's like, not impressed.
Yes.
Exactly. I mean, that you never, I don't know if you ever watched that show, How I Met Your Mother.
Yes.
Yep. If you guys are.
Yep.
And like, Ted is that guy, you know, where he, you know, don't ever profess your love within the first I don't even know. Like, that's a very lesbian move, too. You know, lesbians are always, you know, they always move in together really quickly, or they think they're in love, you know, and that happens all the time, like, with lesbians. I don't know if that's too women emotional, but what's that?
I feel like the character of Barney is like the personification of both men and women trying to get with women, all in the snap of the finger. It's not just a straight guy who's a total ladies' man. I feel like he just is the pure personification of getting the boobies and just hot, the hot
chicks.
Oh,
yeah. And the best part about his character, other than that his actual character, him in real life, he's gay. And I love that. Yes. I love that he plays this womanizing, misogynistic man, and he's not even really into women. And that's what I love the most about that character, is his real life character, you know?
Yeah. Yep. That's what makes him such a fantastic actor, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
You were talking about you getting naked. I remember how you... I think you posted, I don't know if it was on the Hunter Valentine's Facebook or on your personal Facebook, how in episode 1, where Kyomi and her in the shower, how you felt uncomfortable with that one specific scene.
Yeah, I did.
So, what was going through your mind when that was about to air?
The getting naked in the street?
Well, no.
Or the shower scene.
The shower scene.
Well, see, I didn't know, because, like, we only get to see the episode the day before it airs.
Oh, boy.
So, heads up. When I was actually watching the shower scene, I was like, oh, my God. I literally was like, I felt like I was watching my sister, you know? And I literally had to close my eyes. I was not really sure. I wasn't sure I could watch it. I kind of felt that gross feeling in my stomach, you know? I really, really, really did. And I'm not saying that to, you know, just to... It really happened. Like, I was like, ooh. But the best part about that scene, and Kiyomi loves to admit it, is she's like, you know, all I did was drop the soap when I went down. She's like, I didn't do anything else. She's like, it makes it look like something else. And she said, all I did was drop the soap. Oh, yeah. Sure.
Right.
You know what?
That's what they say in prison, too. All I do is grab the stuff.
You know what? What'll help next time if you are in that situation where you have to see that scene again? Make Cookie Monster noises while that's happening.
Well, let's say that there's probably going to be more scenes just like that. I mean, if you've seen the... Lauren and Cammy hooked up in the last episode, and Dinah's not over, so I have no idea what else to expect. I was at Dinah, and I know they were together a lot of that weekend, so, and I know that I wasn't with them sometimes, so I'm kind of getting ready to watch the next episode with my eyes closed, but that's all right.
Oh boy. It's like that movie title, Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah.
So besides all that, has there been anything else on The Real L Word that you were shocked that got on air? Like, were you, that you were surprised to have seen on Showtime? Like, I don't know the best way to ask that. What's, like, the best way to...
Something that you thought was edited out that they wouldn't have normally put in?
Yeah. What take said?
I mean, you know, it's so funny because there's so much stuff that isn't on that I thought would be on there. Because, you know, because I said they film you so much that there are so many funny, funny things that happen that just aren't on there. Of course, you know, some of the stuff they edited a bit strange, so it wasn't really the same moment or the same day, and they kind of, like, make it the same moment and the same day. And, I mean, that happens, and that's fine. So stuff like that was kind of like, wait a minute, that didn't happen like that. And they're like, well, okay, now it did, you know, but other than that... Other than that, I mean, no, I'm not shocked at all. I mean, it's very, very, very hard to shock me in general. Like, I can appreciate anything, and I don't judge anyone. So it's hard to shock me. And the show hasn't been shocking for me, but that's just because my tolerance is a lot higher than most. I love the strap-on scene between Romy You know, I love that. I think I wish it was a little bit more graphic.
I think you're not the only one.
I think they could only get away with that on Skidamax.
I really wanted to. What's that?
I said I think they can only get away with that on Skidamax.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I was going to say, like, I really wanted to, you know, me personally, I would have loved to have done some kind of, you know, big sex scene, which who knows if any of those will make it in or not make it in. Like, I'm not saying that I did do it and I didn't do it because I can't really say. But, you know, one thing I really wanted, you know, to do was something like that. And I think there should be more graphic sex scenes because, I mean, it is Showtime. There's no boundary, you know, and it's not, I'm not talking about watching a porn and I'm not saying anything like that, but I don't think there's anything wrong. And the one thing I think I want people to know in general is that people got to chill out about sex and they need to chill out about nudity. And that's like another reason why I got naked in the street. And it's because people are so, there's so many people out there that just don't appreciate, you know, what Europeans appreciate. And I'm European and I'm Canadian. And I just think that, like, people should be okay with nudity. People should be okay with intimacy, and it shouldn't be weird. You know what I mean? And there's so many people out there that have so many problems.
We need to go back to the time where you can have boobies in a PG movie.
Jesus Christ. I just think there's so many restrictions in general in life. Like, you can't say certain words anymore. And I know, like, I don't want to step on anybody's toes, so I don't really want to get into it because this is, you know, going to be out there to a lot of different people. And this is sort of, I guess, more of a personal conversation. But, you know, I just think that there are too many restrictions on life. And how the fuck are you supposed to have fun? Sorry if I swore, but how are you supposed to have fun when you can't do so many things, or there's so many problems with what you're doing? And that's why I love the fact that, you know, 95% of the people love the fact that I got naked and didn't have a problem with it. And I'm happy about that. You know, that was one thing I was kind of nervous about, where I said, I don't know, people are going to be okay with this. And I don't care if they're not, but I really hope they are, because that means, you know, there's people need to just, like, chill out. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
I totally agree with you on that. This is what I've been saying for, like, what? Forever.
Yeah. More or less. And also, you don't have to apologize about the swearing. We're perfectly fine on that, you know, spectrum. We'll
anybody
just swear.
Who is offended is gone by now.
Yeah. If they were, they would have said, oh, fuck this cool. shit.
Yeah, maybe we should have mentioned that. This is an uncut podcast show, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Uncut! And I'm with three men.
Uh-oh. Whoopsies.
Outside of your storyline in the real L Word, like, what have been some of your favorite moments with the other people that are involved with the show?
I really like, because I got to meet everybody. I really like, I love the married couple, Corey and Casey. And the thing is like, they're going through a really horrible, horrible experience. And I have so much respect for them, because can you imagine, you know, having such a tragedy and then having to record it?
Yeah.
And having to remember those moments for the rest of your life is, and not only just remembering it, now you get to see it as well over and over again. And you sort of relive that. And I think just the amount of respect I have for them, because they're allowing, and that happens a lot. Like, that tragedy is unspoken about, and it happens very frequently. I had a friend that had a stillbirth, really, really good childhood friend of mine, and you know, it ruined her for a long time. Like, not a long time. She really pulled out of it. But just, like, and then from her experience, she found out that so many other people have that happen to them. And I think that their storyline, as tragic as it is, and I'm not saying that I love their story, because, I mean, it hurts so much to see it. But I think that their story is incredibly sad, and I respect the fact that they're allowing the world to see it. And the fact that, like I said, it happens so frequently, and every day it happens. So it's like that there are other people going through that. And so I guess that storyline is one. And I mean, of course, you know, Whitney and Sutter are getting married. So you get the other things. You get, you know,
I loved how they did that proposal thing. That was brilliant on Whitney's part.
I'd have to say, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I kind of cried. I cried in that moment, and I never thought I would. I mean, it's like, it's a really beautiful thing when you can find someone that you love so much and you want to spend the rest of your life with them. And, you know, that is amazing. And the fact that they want to, you know, try that. And, you know, I hope it works, you know, because they have, and I've been, like I said, I got to meet them and I got to get to know them, and they seriously, genuinely have a real found love for each other. And I think that their union is going to be amazing.
Agreed. I mean, great. I'm a little bit sad about Sarah's mother's reaction to it, but I do see how she's slowly but surely warming up to this whole thing about her daughter marrying another woman. So hopefully it'll all turn out all right between those two in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know how what she's going through too. My mother is also, you know, she's Italian, and when I came out to my mother, she had sort of a similar reaction. You know, obviously I didn't tell her I was getting married, but like I told her I was gay, and it took her a long time to like warm up to it, but now she's my biggest fan, you know? So it's like some parents need that, and they come from, you know, Sada's mother comes from the islands of, you know, Portugal, where, like she said, and there's not very many people, and, you know, let alone anybody that's gay. And you know Lucas Silveira.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, he went from a lesbian to a man, and he comes from the exact same background, where, like, his parents are from the small island in Portugal. But he actually had a completely different experience than Sada, where his parents were like, well, his mother was like, oh, yeah, I knew. You know, she's like, I always knew you were a boy. You know, like, it was accepting immediately, you know? And so his story is amazing. Like, yeah. I'm sure, I know you've interviewed him, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And, hey, thanks to Lucas that I got introduced to you three back then, back in 09, so.
That's right.
I remember, we were right after the interview, Middle East downstairs, Cambridge, Mass., the first band finished up and such, and then the three of you went on stage, and by the third song, I think, I had both of your albums and DVD in hand.
Yeah, awesome. The King does that a lot. He's just like, we'll go to like the Middle East or the House of Blues or something like that, and he's just like, hey, this opening band is friggin' awesome. Hold on 1 second. He disappears. I'm like, where the hell did he go? And then he pops up. Look, I got all their albums. Holy hell.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But going back to the real L word, the storyline of Romy at first, with her going back to her boyfriend Jay, and what I really didn't understand is how she felt that whenever she would have to tell her other lesbian friends that she was back with a guy, that she was worried that she was going to be like shunned by them. I mean, why would she think something like that?
I don't know. I feel like, you know, I've met two sides of Romy. I've met her television persona, her like who she is on television, and then I've met her in real life. And I don't really know. Like when I met her and just sat and talked to her for like 20 minutes in New York, she seems so different from how she is. And I don't know if I got the real Romy or not. Like, I'm not really, I think she's really real sweetheart, but then when you see everybody else talk about her, they don't talk very nice about her. And then you see her character on the show. So I'm not really sure why she would have thought people would have, you know, and I get it because like, I'm a lesbian and I get that whole thing where if I had a boyfriend, you know, if I was like, oh, I want to date this guy, I'm in love with this guy, that, you know, you're a lesbian for so long. I guess it's sort of the same thing of when you're just imagine, like, say, you know, Evan, you're straight and you're dating some chick, and then all of a sudden you fall in love with some guy and you bring him and you're like, I have a boyfriend now. Like, it would kind of be the same experience for you if that happened in that sort of way. So for her, it's just the other way around. Like, you know, it sounds like she came from a family where her parents were lesbians, and it was sort of known for her that, okay, being a lesbian is acceptable. And then going from being a lesbian to being, like liking a guy, is sort of the opposite for most people, you know? It's like, I've automatically accepted that you like a guy and not accepted if you like the same sex. But now for her, she felt like she had to go the other way around. And, you know, obviously it was hard for her. And her friends obviously didn't care. But I guess she felt like she needed to feel dramatic about it. You know what I mean? Like, right. Like, oh my God. And so I don't know. Like, I get it, though.
Well, I mean, I was having a talk with King here when we were driving back here, because he was telling me about this part, because I didn't get to see that episode or whatnot. But the whole setup that was going on at the time, you know, I was kind of like sitting there. I was like, why does this remind me of a movie that I just recently watched? And apparently it was chasing Amy. And I was kind of like, they were treating the lesbian group like that they had as a friendship, as an inner circle club and whatnot. And when she kind of came out and said, oh, I'm kind of dating this guy and stuff like that, she kind of got shunned, like, out of, like, the whole group. But, I mean, that was because at the time that movie was recorded, it was, like, 90s?
97.
97, so it was kind of a different age back then, more or less. But now we're kind of giving more acceptance to, you can be whatever you want. You could be gay, bi, straight, lesbian, whatever you want to do, whatever you like to do now. But yeah, I could see how she kind of felt like, oh crap, I'm gonna, you know, get pushed out of the group. Yeah, that kind of seemed scary. But you know, maybe it worked out for her in the end.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, it's kind of weird that you would, you know, you would be scared that your friends who know you so well wouldn't accept it. Like, that to me, if I had some big secret that isn't really that big of a deal, but, you know, felt like my friends weren't going to accept me, then you probably don't have the right friends, you know?
Yes.
Or you don't have the right confidence. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
If I seriously fell in love with a guy, I mean, I really can't see that happening, no offense, but like, if I seriously fell in love with a guy, if my friend, I wouldn't even be like worried to tell my friends. I'd be like, no, I like a guy now, and that's it. Like, you know, like, you deal with it.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be scared.
More power to you then.
But that won't happen. So,
guys, don't get your hopes up.
Hopes is, don't get your hopes up, or what else? I don't know.
Alright, so I remember last year when you were doing the Lady Killer tour with Vanity Theft and Sick of Sarah, and I don't know if you, I don't recall if you posted this, again, either on your Facebook or Twitter, or was it, but you said you were, like, so close to finding an apartment with everybody in Sick of Sarah, and personally, I think that would be an amazing spinoff show right then and there, the real L Word.
Yes!
Do you think something like that could ever happen?
Oh my God. I mean, we had joked about, as we all know, I don't know if you know, but Vero and Katie are dating. So, you know, Vero, our bass player, and then Katie, their lead guitarist. They're together. They've been dating ever since. They're still going strong as ever. Katie Murphy's in New York right now. You know, and so we had always joked, like, you know, Vero always jokes, I don't know how much of a joke this is, but she always says, oh, I want to move to Minneapolis. And so we always said, no, 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 the band cannot move to Minneapolis, because obviously we're a unit. And until that day where we can actually live in separate cities, we have to live in the same one. But we said, well, it makes more sense if we all move to, like, L.A., you know, and get a house in L.A., because Sick of Sarah is based, even though they're based in Minneapolis, all their team is based out of L.A., so they travel there for work a lot. So we had said it'd be funny to get a house and all live in L.A. together. And I mean, I don't know. We're all open to it. It's not off the table. I mean, I just don't know how much of a reality that's going to become, right? Like, I can't imagine it being a sober living experience, because Sick of Sarah and Hunter Valentine together is, I don't think I've ever been so drunk on a tour. Like, we normally are, you know, try to maintain professionalism and try not to drink, you know, every night, and try not to get crazy and ridiculous. But it's so hard when you're on tour with your friends, like Sick of Sarah and Vanity Theft. So I can't imagine what it would be like to live with them. Like, I probably would we would need to have my own house, like maybe in the back, like the bunker, you know, like
the guest house,
shelter. Yeah, like the pool house, you know.
Yeah,
like Carlton and Will, you know, their little house.
Yeah, that'd be a great idea. It could follow both bands. It could be about like you two recording an album together. It'd be like like Sick of Hunter supergroup filming. Recording the album,
yeah,
and then all the hijinks that ensue before, after, and all that other fun shit.
And don't forget to buy the extended DVD.
Yeah, I think that would be great. Let's pitch a network.
Oh, I wish I had $1 million and I could do it.
I would just do it straight out if I had the money.
So,
yeah.
With the final question regarding Real Hour and all that stuff, after this is all over... I mean, you mentioned a little bit here and there about it, but what's next on the agenda for Hunter Valentine?
We are going to be posting our final, like right now we have a sort of a small run posted. We're going to Florida and back. We have some Canadian dates that we have to post as well. We just got Northwest Territory Pride in Yellowknife. I've never been there before, and I'm really excited because it's just a part of Canada I've never been to. But we're basically going to start posting our tour that we're going to be doing. It's going to be a U.S. national tour. We start in Ohio, and we're cutting west and then, you know, going from there all around and then making it back. And we're hitting a lot of new cities that we've never been to. So we're going to be hitting Michigan and, you know, like cities in Michigan I've never even heard of. So hopefully there's people that know us and want to come out. And just, like, cities in Illinois I've never heard of. So, like, the Midwest is going to get a good experience out there because we've never been to a lot of those places. So basically the U.S. national tour, we're doing the Canadian tour before that kicks off in September. And hopefully, like, our plan is to hit Europe in the end of November. Fingers crossed for that. You know, we have a lot of support out there that wants to help us out. So it's just a matter of timing and getting that pulled together on time. So I guess, you know, Canada, US, and Europe is what we're going to be doing for the rest of the year. So that takes us basically to Christmas. And then at some point on our tour, we're going to be hitting Boston. And yeah. I think I have a steak dinner waiting for me.
Yes.
How do you like it, Don?
If I remember correctly.
How do you like your steaks done? Because so I can make sure I can cook those up right for you.
Medium good. Rare.
Okay, medium.
Medium rare.
I got it.
Yeah,
done.
And I like a lot of salt. Not too much salt, but like when you season it, and then when you think it's seasoned, season it a little bit more.
Now I don't know if you can reveal, but are you going to be touring with anybody for this? Like who's going to be like your opening act?
Yes, we will. I can reveal it. Well, for the 2 week run that we're doing, we're doing Vegas Pride, and that's going to be mostly like the L Word cast. And then our 2 week run, we're doing local openers. So a lot of bands have been reaching out to us. So it's really about, I guess we should promote all the local bands should promote and just let everybody know that they're opening. But on our major 6 week run, we're going to be going out with a band called Queen Cabot, and they are going to jump on right from the start. And if you don't know them, you should get to know them. They're a female-fronted band, really awesome, and I'm really excited to tour with them.
Excellent. Fantastic.
I'm sure we're going to put our link up for them as well.
Too. Yeah, so, yeah. We can definitely put up a link to their website so people can check out their music too.
Because
you know us. We're there to promote awesome artists. We've been
plugging away like for what two, three years now.
3 years, yes. 3 years now.
150. Happy birthday.
Of sorts, yeah. Trust me, Boston Bash Brigade will not stop until you guys sell out like Madison Square Garden or something. So
we're going. I won't either.
Now. Laura is going to be a bastard or bastet for the day, and she's going to join us in this review of the new movie that just came out, The Bourne Legacy.
Can my name be Tits McGee?
Sure. Oh,
exactly. I like that name. That's a great name.
Yes.
Now, just to ask you, do you have, like, you know, have you been watching, like, the Bourne series with Matt Damon? And
I have. I've seen every movie, and I went to see The Bourne Legacy last night.
And now, compared to the whole concept of the three movies previous to this one with Jeremy Renner, what do you feel about it? Because, I don't know, I think a lot of us are like, what the hell?
You know, this movie seemed, I mean, they're all very Hollywood because there's no way that physically a human being can do the things that the Bourne, you know, Jason Bourne was able to do. But this movie just seemed really Hollywood, like extremely polished, and like some of the stuff that happened and incorporating, of course, there has to be a love story. It sort of had all of the above checklist. You know what I mean?
I don't think there really was much of a love story in this one.
It was going through the motions, more or less. But yeah, like, you kind of how the first part of the movie where, like, he kind of fell in love with that girl, but, like, it wasn't really showed that they were together until that point where he finally meets her at the motor scooter place in, like, Italy and stuff to show that they were, like, you know, really, like, in love with one another because of that. But yeah, this one was kind of like, yeah, they're kind of getting a little bit more intimate, you know, on that end. And the movie itself, like, I don't know about you, Tits McGee. I don't know about you, but I almost fell asleep, like, right in the middle of it because there was so much, like, there was, like, dry parts. Like, there was, like, the first part was, like, kind of dry, and then there was action, and then it was just, for another 45 minutes of, like, just explaining and what the hell was going on because I didn't understand the whole pill and virus thing.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And you know, it's so funny that you say that. I went with my friend, and he fell asleep. He really fell asleep, and I knocked him. And it's right at that moment where I'm like, "What the hell are these pills all about? Like, what does this mean?
I mean, like a fail-safe? Like, is it a setup that like?" They designed because of the fact that the whole Bourne issue went, no. So they're like, here's the pills, so just in case, you know, okay, Tag, what's your take on these pills? Are they like superhuman steroid shit?
This is science fiction versus science fantasy, except in an action movie. Nobody really cared in the original Star Wars series how the lightsaber worked and how they had powers. The pills basically were trying to explain how Jason Bourne could do the things he did. Without actually showing it in the real, kind of like midichlorians with the original Star Wars. So it's one pill increased his strength and everything, and the blue one, I believe, increased his memory. So it's what we accepted with the original movies that Jason Bourne has powers, just like we accept that James Bond can do the things he could do. And this was them going back and trying to build a movie around explaining all the different powers and all the skills that Jason Bourne had, and they turned it into a pill, and they based the movie solely around the pills, in my opinion.
Well, what I want to try to understand is, why was this, what was their whole panic issue? You know, what was the panic about? Like, what got leaked? What got out? Like, why did they want to shut this down? Like, what?
They really didn't get into that.
They were showing side by side. If you remember the original movies, a lot of these scenes that they were showing with Pamela Landy and everything else were during it. So all the while, when he was in the mountains, they were showing scenes as if the Jason Bourne tragedy is happening side by side with this movie. So it's as Jason Bourne's about to go public and Pamela's about to send the documents to the news is when they decided, oh crap, let's get rid of all the agents. So they killed off, or at least tried to kill off all the agents. And that's when you had the panic of, this is collateral, this is happening in the middle of the whole Jason Bourne tragedy. Yeah,
and Edward Norton's character is trying to sweep it all underneath the rug. And of course, he even went further and he did a program that wasn't supposed to be done and he stepped it further as well, too. So a lot of the stuff, like, it kind of went around and they're like, oh, God, you did this without even letting us know? Or, like, it was...
Yeah, it Jason Bourne was what you knew, this is what you didn't know.
Yeah, exactly. And, like... Treadstone and all the other, you know, operations that they did, they tried to just sew it up and, like, put it to rest, but I don't know, in another sense, the way how they ended it, it was kind of like, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah.
Honestly, I felt like you could just take out all the Bourne references, and it would be the same fucking movie.
Yep.
It's yep. it's like Hollywood's like going cash cow.
What was that movie with Tom Cruise there and what's their name? And they recorded it in Boston there.
Right? Night and Day.
Yeah, Night and Day. It was. I felt like it was like another version of Night and Day. It just it kind of like
it's Night and Day, and it's let's call this Mission Impossible like 5, and it's not that.
Yeah,
and it's
exactly.
like they tried to merge two things they didn't have to, and they just wanted the Jason Bourne namesake to get the initial customers in to watch this. I just think with all the downtime, the amount of time they spent trying to connect the stories and describe the background of Jason Bourne, they missed the whole fact of making this new character and promoting him to the point where we like him, I think.
Yeah. I like him. I definitely like his character. But I like him as the actor.
Yeah, yeah. Jeremy Renner, he's a great actor. And actually, funny thing on the side with him, he actually does, he flips houses. That's what he does on the side. He does movies, and then what he does is he flips houses. He lives in the houses that he flips. Once he flips them, he sells them or rents them out or whatever, and he does movies at the same time. That guy's freaking amazing. But for him to do this movie, I was still kind of like, this is kind of a disappointment from what I'm used to seeing from him.
So you're saying that he should flip three more houses?
Yeah, flip three more houses, make some serious cash that way. And then...
Was your theater full? No. I know you went...
No. We usually like to go on a Saturday morning because of the fact that we can always get, you know...
The cheap tickets.
Cheap tickets. We're not saying that we're cheap. It's just, it's better
we're
that
cheap.
We're cheap dates and whatnot. So we like to go and when it's cheap. And along with that, there's not a lot of people in the theater. So we don't feel like we're going to have to scrunch together in the theater and rub elbows with each other so much. Because it's just not fun with that. No. But just more or less, it's like... That when I looked at the theater, I was like, okay, there's a sprinkle of people here. It's not completely packed, you know. And so I don't think it's going to do as well as it may be projected.
I don't think so either because I went Friday night in New York City, and my theater was about half full.
No kidding.
Wow.
And that's
Friday
that's
night in Manhattan.
Manhattan.
Down.
Yeah, with 10 million people.
Yeah.
And that's...
I went to the 10 o'clock show, half full. I was surprised. When I walked in about 15 minutes before the previews were to start, and the theater was almost empty. So people sort of came in at the last minute. I was really surprised how empty... Like, I thought it was going to... I was almost like, oh my God, should I get tickets online? Like, is this going to get sold out tonight? Like, in New York, I've tried to go see movies here before on opening night or even... You know, within and around that first showing, and I've had to, you know, go early and hopefully not have to sit right in the front. And this was a complete surprise to me. I don't think it did well. Did you check how it did on, like...
I'm checking out IMDb right now. I'm trying to see what the ratings have been, and along with that, not how much they actually put into the cost of the actual filming and whatnot, because you always got to take a look at, you know... How much did they actually put into, you know, production?
I think it was like almost $100 million they put into production for
this. All right, here's the budget. It's $125 million.
Oh, my God.
Estimated. I wish I had that laying around. I might have made a better movie. But, I mean, holy shit. I mean, okay, you got $125 million for a runtime of 135 minutes. Right now... As it's rated, everybody out of about 5,213 users from IMDb, we have 7.6 out of 10. So it's...
Whoa.
Is actually a shock to me because some of the movies that we sitting around this table have sat there and went, that was a fucking good movie. And then we go and look at it. Four out of 10? What the fuck? What are you doing? Like, are you guys retarded? What's wrong with you? What's wrong? You know, but more or less it's just, well, I mean, you got also the Metascore now. Apparently they've added that now to IMDb, and that's 61 out of 100. So it's a little bit worse on that end. But for the most part, this is kind of interesting where it might go, it might not. I don't know if it's going to be able to break the bank for the 125. It's definitely not going to break records. If you're sitting down and... Down in New York, it wasn't even jam-packed.
Nobody's showing up.
Yeah. So. I mean, not unless somebody was like, oh yeah, when was that Bourne Legacy movie supposed to come out? Oh, last week? Ah, crap. Never mind.
Yeah.
The one thing that really disappointed me, too, was that there wasn't a scene with Jeremy Renner and Edward Norton at the same time. Not because I think it would have been an awesome scene, but because of them during the filming, the Avengers was going on. filming of that. And I just would love to have seen Jeremy Renner go up to Edward Norton and go, "You should have stayed on, man. Yeah. You should have stayed on as Hulk, dude." But altogether, I felt this movie was extremely disappointing.
I don't even think there are any books to back this up.
I'm the original author, he passed away. His son took it over, and he was writing the books and stuff like that. This is just a side thing.
Yeah.
And Matt Damon himself was like, I don't want to do this movie because of the fact that it doesn't have a strong enough, you know, actual backing to it right now. And he says, "Oh yeah, I'll do another movie as long as the script is strong and whatnot." So I'm thinking that they took and presented this to Matt Damon. Matt Damon probably said, "Nah, no."
Yeah.
And then somebody was like, "We gotta kind of capitalize on this. We can go and just go and take let's see, Jeremy Renner. We'll just take Jeremy Renner and we'll stick him in the position and say he's a totally different born type person."
There's a tagline. There was never just one.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you wanted weird, if you actually analyze the movie, especially at the beginning when they're doing the whole, this was what Bourne's doing and this is what this agent's doing, there's what, one picture or maybe two of Matt Damon in the whole thing, and they would not show Jason Bourne other than like carvings of his name in a bench or that one picture of him. So I'm wondering,
he got gratuities just because of his face and, you know, because of the actual character.
I'm buying another boat with this money.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm wondering why they didn't show as much to link the plots together.
Well, I mean,
other than saying his name.
Tits McGee over there. Remember that whole scene where the reporter there, Ross, he runs outside. They basically he got shot in the head. That's basically his whole little role there. Just run out here and get shot in the face.
Why didn't they show the quick scene with Jason actually in that scene? Yeah. Why did they just show the solo reporter getting shot in the head? They weren't playing the news article until after that when they were doing the whole reporting thing. So I'm thinking something's holding them back. Probably money-wise, they probably would have had to give Matt Damon a bigger kickback for every scene that they took from
it. It wouldn't just be $125 million. It'd be like $150 million.
Meanwhile, he goes on to Jimmy Kimmel Live and dresses up in a grape suit.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, I never saw that.
You never did? Wow.
No.
You know what this kind of reminds me of? Tits Mickey, have you ever watched Robot Chicken before?
Yes.
Have you ever seen the skit where they did Lord of the Rings, The Final Journey? They find a half-written book of J.R.R. Tolkien, which is supposed to be the final story, and they give it to like their 7-year-old like great-grandnephew to finish it. And it's like Frodo and Bilbo was like, "Isn't this a lovely day? I'd like to eat poop." I felt like this was what happened with the Bourne legacy. It's like, Jason Bourne is here. Oh, I like to eat ice cream.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm behind you again. Wait, what? No, why? Why are you behind me? Because that's basically what he kept doing to Pamela Landy.
Yeah.
It's like, now go get some rest. What do you mean, get some rest? You're behind me again? God damn it.
and that's the thing. He was, Blonick brought this up in the car too. He was just way too talkative.
Yeah, he seemed like he was, he had like kind of like an ADHD fix. He was just like, hey, what are you doing? Huh? 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 What are you doing? So what do you do? Huh? What's your name? You didn't give me your name. I gave you my name. Come on, give me it back, you know? I was like, wow, can you just tune it back a little bit, Jeremy?
What did you think of the motorcycle scene?
Well, there was nothing but a motorcycle swerving in traffic for all of, 15 minutes straight? Almost no action.
It wasn't as action-packed as, like, the other car scenes that they've done. Like, there was the
cars are hitting each other and stuff. This is a motorcycle swerving in traffic.
Okay, like,
it's not like a bunch of, like, police cars that are going after him. Which, by the way, every time that happens in a movie, all I can think of is the Blues Brothers theme song playing in the background.
Yeah. Doot, you know. But more or less, It's one of those things, like, you take the first movie, he's in a fucking Mini Cooper in France, and he's getting chased by police, and he's getting chased by the motorcycle. That was an awesome scene.
Yeah.
The second movie was,
it was a whole chase sequence, really.
There was a whole chase sequence when he was in, like, Russia and stuff like that with, the new, Dredd there. I can't remember his name off the top of
my head. Carl Urban.
Yeah, Carl Urban. And then the third one where they're in New York, I can't remember his name off the top, but they actually made a commercial out of that one for the Volkswagen Touareg or something like that, where the fucking thing gets smashed by a friggin' cop car, and he gets slammed into, like, the side of the pole, and he gets out of the car and goes, Jesus Christ, holy crap, I survived. You know, it's just, it's one of those things, like, they made it awesome. This one was... They like, okay, I give it to him on, like, grinding down the handrail with a motorcycle, but I think that was probably the only, like, real awesome part about it.
No, the only real awesome thing I thought was when Rachel Weisz took off her helmet, hit the Asian dude, and the guy just flipped over.
Yeah.
That was the only cool part of that whole movie.
Well, you know what I think's hilarious? The best part where he's like, have you ever ridden on a motorcycle before? She's like, no, and then they're like, literally, I think... The fact that she was able to hold on for any of that.
Yeah.
Well, yes. Not only that, but he, like, the line that he actually said, he says, have you ever, like, the way he actually said it was like, have you ever been on a motorcycle before? She said, no. He's like, all right, try to keep up with me. Wait, hold on. Why are you trying to keep up with me? You're on the same fucking motorcycle. Yeah. What the fuck is wrong with you?
He doesn't even know how to drive a
exactly.
Yeah.
Oh. Shall we rate this motherfucker?
Well, yeah. I also have to point out, remember in the originals, there were always a gratuitous number of fight scenes in this combat. There was, what, one scene or two
scenes? The one scene
he beats the crap out of a
jumps
cop.
Off, jumps down through, like, a really small alleyway and drops down on one and then beats the other, beats the shit out of the other one. That was, like, that was probably...
5 seconds, then there's another...
The three
security guards. And then they're
in the house.
And that was it?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, there was only, like, sprinkles of out of, like, this 2-hour and 15-minute movie. There was, like...
Yeah.
Well, there was the wolf, guys.
What?
The wolf, when he wrestled the wolf.
Okay. Which, by the way, I loved how when the drum was flying, the dog just goes... The wolf just goes, "Rut, roo!"
There were some parts that there were comedy and there didn't need to be too. And I don't know. They tried too hard.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
It didn't feel like the Bourne, like, movie, because, like, the other ones, like, they had, like, there was set things that would happen and the camera actions and shit, there wasn't really an explosion in this one. And how many times were there explosions? I mean, they burned down the house. Whoopty fucking do. And then, like, the only other explosion they did was blow it up with a Predator drone missile. The only other one that I have to say is, like, the fucking one that was awesome, like, from the other Bourne movie was when the guys are walking up to the building, he broke the gas line and he stuck a piece of paper in a toaster and MacGyvered the shit out of it, walked out of there, and the guys are walking up and it blows them up and throws them across the street. I was like, that was fucking awesome. Why couldn't they have done or created something like that in this movie? But they didn't do it. It was sad.
Yeah.
I got the rant started again. I had the rant about one last thing and just began it again.
You suck, jackass.
Okay, so, Tis McGee, usually we rate movies between 0 and 5, and you can do, like, 2.4.
Rate it however you want.
If you felt it was really, really bad, we have negative 0. That's how bad some movies can
get. Oh, yeah. What do I think? I mean, I really want to like this movie because I'm a big Bourne fan, like, really big, but I guess I'd have to give it, let's say, a 2.7.
Okay, so it's leaning more towards a positive error.
Yeah, like, because I want to like it. Yeah.
Right.
I think that's why.
Well, I was kind of disappointed.
Oh, you were pissed. Dude,
he was, like, talking while we were walking down the stairs. What the fuck? Damn it! What the...
Yeah.
He got out of his seat pissed off.
Yeah, that was...
He's like, screw if there's anything at the end credits. Fuck this.
Yeah. Do not believe the hype. That's all I can say. Well, that's all I can say. I was just mentally disappointed. This movie, I felt, ruined the good Bourne name. I think...
They even used Moby at the end.
Yeah, that's the only other thing that was related to the whole thing. They used the Moby song.
Wait, Bourne was a code name. Did this guy at least have the last name of Bourne?
No.
No. That's the one thing.
Alex Cross.
It's the concept of legacy for the...
Yeah, this was...
Continuance or something like that.
But it was at the same time, so it didn't matter
It wasn't like, this is 10 years down the road, dude.
They got the word legacy completely wrong, the way they portrayed it.
Yeah. This is
somebody send them a dictionary.
But for a grade, I'll give it a 1.8 out of 5.
Wow. Wow.
Very disappointed with this film.
I don't think we've ever gone that low without just giving it a negative 0. Really, like, I don't think we have. Like,
no, no.
A lot of thought went into this for Evan.
No, I gave a similar score to Halloween 2.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was pretty bad. Sorry, Rob Zombie, but you got forced into that one. With a gun. You want to go, Tank?
All right. Like I said, there was no explanation needed for these things. I accepted that he was a secret agent. I didn't need the extra red pill, blue pill, green pill, whatever they wanted to call it. Yellow pill that popped up that killed people.
Yeah, what the fuck was up with the yellow pill? They didn't really go into that.
This is a new designer pill. Go ahead.
It's called acid.
Yeah.
That, and it's just too much happened at the same time. If they focused on one, if this was all about this character and they linked it slightly to Jason Bourne, the whole pill thing definitely ruined it for me. So I'm going to give it a 2.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, now, that, yeah.
Are you going to be the one who...
No, I'm not going to be a dick, no. I'm not going to be a dick.
I feel bad for the movie. I'm going to give it a 4.
No. I had high hopes for this movie, especially with, like, the blitzkrieg, like, you know, promoting the shit out of this movie. And now I'm starting to see, like, if you're going to be trying to promote the shit out of this movie, there's probably something wrong with it. And Tag has said this before, like, I mean, now, like, the other thing, like, when we were doing, like, the preview trailers and stuff like that, there was a whole thing about Halo 4, and we're like, it's gonna suck ass.
Yeah.
It's gonna suck big ass. But, no,
wait, there's no in-game footage? I wonder what they're trying to cover up.
So, more or less, the whole thing with the movie, it was a disappointment, and I could say that, yes, okay, fine, it has Bourne in front of it on the legacy aspect, but it doesn't have anything really to do with the actual Bourne thing besides some of, like, the
same
players.
Universe.
Same universe, same players and whatnot, just the game's different, and it's not even proper, so... I could give it somewhere around a 2.5 because it didn't seem to flow, and have I ever fallen asleep in a movie theater?
I don't think he even fell asleep for Where the Wild Things Are.
Yeah. And,
I'm sorry, I didn't like that movie.
Exactly. See, I agree with her on that one. I was like, this movie fucking sucks. This made like the movie like the book seem even like fucking crazier than it was or something like that. It's like you're not supposed to scare the shit out of children. You're supposed to give them like a story, you know?
Well, I mean, I love, what's his, Gandolfini. Is that his last name?
Gandolfini.
Yeah. Fucking. Yeah, you, the guy from Sopranos right there, you don't want him, like, fucking scaring the shit out of your chair. Roar! Ah!
Yeah, he's I think that was the wrong... I mean, he's a great actor, too. I think that was probably the wrong...
Yeah, wrong person.
...sort of role for him, even if he was trying to sort of break his tough guy role, but I don't think that was really the way to go.
Did a good job at it.
Yeah. He ripped off a character's arm in that film.
I mean, what about, like, The Mexican? You ever see the movie The Mexican with, like, Brad Pitt and... Julia Roberts, he's in there. James Gandolfini's in there. He's like one of the killers and stuff like that. But he's a closet gay killer. So he kind of like, you know, he's trying to like make him seem like a macho man and everything like that. But Julia Roberts like gets him to like hang out with this guy and like they have something so she could try to escape her. It was really fucked up.
Oh.
But yeah, more or less, yeah, like it just to go from. Like, the whole action-packed,
to
like...
To go from Bourne Ultimatum to this.
Yeah, to Legacy, I was like, yeah, they maybe should have just tossed that in the the burner and just said, forget it, it's just not worth it. They just wasted a lot of money.
That's a lot, I know, I was just going to say, that's a lot of money. I mean, I can't imagine it being made back. Like, this movie was nothing like the other movies, and, you need to have that sort of...
Yes.
Backing, you know, I was almost scared when they started doing, you know, when they did sort of the trilogy of the Bourne movies. It's like, oh no, I'm scared to see the next one because the last one was so good. You know,
how are they gonna top it? Yeah,
yeah. So hooray, we were all very disappointed by this movie. 3 cheers for disappointment.
What a wonderful waste of 2 hours.
Can I get my life force back for that? No, no. You just go to the counter and ask for your life back. Jesus.
Wow.
But I mean, yeah, like, we could kind of compare the whole concept of, like, The Dark Knight Rises. Like, they put in a shite load of money for that one. Mm-hmm. And then they definitely got it back like tenfold. Easily.
Yeah. Yes.
So well, they were going to get back if that was a flop anyway.
So, exactly.
I mean, the previous ones are already guaranteed. This one was. Yeah. Great. Although it had too much downtime.
Way too much downtime.
Yeah. All right. So we have just run out of time. Wow. Hooray. We actually filled up our quota.
Usually we're overfilling our quotas.
Yes.
It's not a bad thing.
Yeah. So remember, visit our website at b3crew.com for recent news, reviews, podcasts, episodes, and videos featuring members of the B3 crew. If you have any questions, comments, anything you want us to talk about, you can reach us at thebastards@bostonbearsbrigade.com. I'm on Twitter at king_baby_duck. Bluonic's on at Bluonic, and Tag is at Tag 8667 or something like that.
I don't even use it anymore.
Don't worry
Twitter,
about it.
Twitter, Facebook, all these other things. I got about 8 chats on one monitor. I need a third monitor if I want to have Twitter open.
We're also on facebook.com/BostonBashBrigade. You can see new postings and whatnot of that we put up there and all the crazy wackiness that we've done as of lately or other fun stuff that we'll do in general. Also, we want to say thank you to the Electric Sisterhood. And you could go check out their website, check out our affiliate section right there and then, and you could just click on them. And all our other affiliates are there as well, so.
Yes.
And we're working on getting some more, but.
Yep.
Now, Tits McGee here.
Yes.
You should go and plug away. Go plug. Plug it.
Okay. And I want to say thanks to you guys for having me on today and making me go see that movie.
Horrible.
We're sorry.
ValentineMusicValentine.com. We're going to be posting all of our tour shows over the next week. And obviously, we're on Twitter, so /HunterValentine. Facebook, we're Laura Valentine, Kiyomi Valentine, Hunter Valentine. Find us everywhere. Any social site will be there. And I'll probably be naked.
No, yeah, that's a plug.
Yeah, speaking of which, brag about this show you're doing next week, sort of in our neck of the woods, that apparently there are no boys allowed at.
Aww.
Oh, is it really no boys allowed?
I checked all the pictures of this party from the previous year. There was only one guy in there, and it was a lifeguard, and he had the look on his face as like, I wanted to go to the sausage fest, not the taco party.
I was wondering if it was an all-girl event, but yeah, we're playing in Randolph, Massachusetts, and at a Fusion pool party, and it is a huge lesbian bash. It starts at noon. We're playing at 6. We are going to be hanging out by the pool because, I mean, there's supposed to be a lot of hot ladies and ladies in general. We're obviously also 10 o'clock on Thursday nights on Showtime, Catch the Real L Word, where our so-called reality is being aired.
Altered reality.
Yes.
Altered reality.
Yes, Laura, thank you so much for joining us on this show. You are welcome back anytime. We'll always keep a seat open for you. If you ever want to come on and just plug the fuck out of something.
Or if
horrible movies.
Or say, you know, for fuck's sake, as we say, you know, like, whatever's pissing us off at the time, you can go on anytime and we'll be like, thank you, Tits McGee, with that oh for fuck's sake.
You got it. I think we should go live when I'm eating the steak.
Oh, God.
I'm thinking that should be a little
plug
for your show.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yes. Get the other ladies, the Hunter Valentine, involved. And yes, look out for that album when it comes out next month.
Wait. So
Light and Conquer, baby.
When are you going to be when are you going to be here for that steak again?
in Boston.
Yeah.
It's going to be. Oh, let's see. I think we hit Boston at the end of our tour, so it's probably not going to be till November. So you have time to save up.
Oh,
yes.
God. It's not that I have to save up. It's just like I'll go outside in the wintertime and cook for you.
I think we're hitting Boston at the end. I can't remember exactly when we hit Boston, but it's definitely on our third tour. So it's not going to be till October or November.
Sounds good to me.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So until next time, this is King Diggy Duck.
Bluonic.
Okay.
Tits McGee!
Reminding you, you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but it sure helps.